You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, looking at all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800, and you can email myself, patrick102fm@gmail.com. And to start off today, I have a question in from Siobhan. Siobhan says, Christmas morning is always stressful with the kids, with toys and everything like that, and is there any tips I might have for Christmas morning when it comes to opening gifts and things like that? So I would have a few different things, but I looked up an article just to, in case I'd be forgetting something and might add to, you know, just thinking of batteries and have a bag for rubbish and things like that for all the wrappings and things like that to have a mess. But let's see what, this is sandiegofamily.com. I found an article about it. So set expectations for Christmas morning is their first tip. Decide ahead of time if your children can look under the Christmas tree when they get up. Or if they must stay in their room until a certain time, or if they can wake up when they wake. If your children will be waiting before opening presents, Dr. Jackie Lewis-Lyons, clinical psychologist who specializes in children and women's issues, suggested hanging your children's filled stockings on the door for them to open when they while they wait. Also, to have something else to keep them going, is it? Talk to your children about what to expect when it's time to open presents. What is your family doing to take turns opening presents, or will everyone open presents all at once? Is something going to pass out? Actually, that's a good idea, actually. I think it's happened over the years where, you know, six or seven people are opening presents at the same time. If there's a big household and, you know, we'd go to visit my sister's household and the kids and all that, and there could be seven or eight people and all opening presents at the same time. And I think it's actually good if people take turns and open a present and, oh, that's lovely, and everyone looks at it, and then they, you know, rather than everyone opening presents all over the place and no one knows what the other people got and it's all crazy and there's wrappings everywhere. And I think it's good to take your time and enjoy it, you know, that kind of way. It only happens one day a year, and so that's a good tip, I think. Can they play with their presents right away, or are there certain presents due to be assemble requirements? That's another thing as well. Sometimes you might want to pre-assemble stuff to have it ready, and other times then maybe the fun is in the assembling part of it as well, but sometimes they just want to play straight away and then it's not ready for them. And so that's a good tip as well, to check that first. That we'll need to wait until also, will you have the tools to put it together? Make sure if you need a power drill or screwdrivers or Allen keys is another one as well. People always forget Allen keys, and a lot of these things need Allen keys, and sometimes they don't come included or they're very awkward. You might have a kind of a ratchet one that might be a lot faster and things like that. That's why I often on a Christmas morning have ran out to the shed and got my socket set and use the kind of Allen key attachment for a ratchet and put something together in, you know, instead of taking 2 hours, have it done in 20 minutes, you know, just to be able to do it much quicker that way. A licensed mental health counsellor and president of the Nurtured Parent encourages parents not to get attached to a specific outcome on Christmas morning. We have wonderful dreams of what Christmas should look like, and when it doesn't come the way we wanted, we become disappointed or stress ourselves out trying to make it better. Yeah, that's often true too, you know. Sometimes kids react differently, but there's always something, you know, and sometimes they, you know, they get like a PlayStation and they don't get the exact game they wanted. They get a different game or something, and then they're not happy. But then when they actually set it up and they start playing, they're happy enough and they end up getting the game down the line anyway or something like that. Or they get the wrong console, but then they'll end up liking the console they got or something like that anyway. So it always works out for the best most of the time. consider spreading out gifts. Yeah, that's what I was saying, to maybe take it one at a time. Or, you know, if your children are going to receive a lot of gifts or are very young, consider having them open only a portion of the gifts on Christmas morning. When kids open too many presents, they may become overwhelmed. Yeah, that's happened a lot, all right? Like, I've seen kids open something really nice and within a minute and a half they've forgotten about it. It's just, oh, that's lovely. Oh, I always wanted that. What's next? And then it's like, it's already forgotten about. And sometimes it's never looked at again, you know, something nice that maybe wasn't their main gift, but it was really, really nice. And it kind of gets tossed aside after that. It's just the opening and the initial look. And then it's never even played with properly sometimes. So maybe that's another thing afterwards, is to kind of like, you know, you got this now. You know, enjoy it or use it or make sure you do something with it and give each present its own due, because, the, you know, work has gone into putting it together and buying it in the first place, earning the money to buy it and all that. So, you know, it should make the most out of every one of them. One strategy is to open gifts from your immediate family on Christmas Eve and open presents from other members and Santa on Christmas morning. If you will be visiting grandparents later in the day or that after the Christmas, you might have your children open presents from them at that time. That might be a good idea if it works out well, I suppose. Sometimes I've seen where someone's been allowed to open one on Christmas Eve. And like, oh, can I just have one or something like this? So they gave them some small one or something to keep them going because they were getting so excited. And then, yeah, usually though, yeah, it depends. Yeah, I suppose it might be a good idea, actually, if you're going visiting grandparents or something like that, to don't have their presents there. That's a mistake maybe I've made, where I've gone to my niece and nephew's house and brought their presents too, and they're opening the whole lot in one go. So maybe it might have been better off, actually, to wait till I go to my parents' house and they come up there and give them there as well, or even have them visit our own house and they can go around to three different houses. And each present then gets its own kind of due, so that might be a good idea as well. Gather supplies and set up an organization system. Make sure that you have all supplies that you will need on Christmas morning within easy reach, since not having the right batteries for a special toy can cause disappointment. Make sure that you have common battery sizes, AA, AAA and C batteries on hand, and those the fire alarm batteries, the with the two points on the top as well, they're always missing. They're always the ones that something will need. That the controller for the radio control car usually needs those. So I forget the name of them. 9-volt battery anyway. I just Google it there. PP3, it says like that. But yeah, the 9-volt battery anyway, the ones from the fire alarms, people will know them. They're a good one to not forget as well, because there's always something that might need one of those batteries. And you have your AAAs and your AAs and your C or D batteries, and all of a sudden it needs one of those 9-volt batteries and you don't have it, and they can't play with the toy, and oh, we'll get it later, and then trying to find a shop that's open, and you're trying to go to the 24-hour shop to see if they have them, and they could be sold out of batteries because other people could have the same problem. So maybe what might be a best idea is to do a bit of research on each item and look up the batteries. Phillips and a flathead screwdriver as well. Yeah, definitely. And Allen keys, I was saying. You should have a pair of scissors, definitely, for packaging. And sometimes the packaging inside the wrapping is the worst one. The hard plastic ones is very difficult sometimes. So a good scissors is good for that. Put the batteries and tools in a small basket so that you can easily find them when needed. To help keep the open presents from getting lost, give each person a basket or a laundry basket to their presents. Yeah, what we usually do is they'd have their own corner, so you know, a chair with a table beside it or something, and they are behind them on the sofa. They'd stack them up and put them around the place, all their different gifts or whatever. But yeah, so that's a good idea as well. And the bag for rubbish as well. This is especially helpful if you are opening presents at someone else's house and will need to bring them home. Yeah, that's why I usually have a bag. So if I'm opening presents at someone else's house and there's something there for me or something like that, I'll have them in a bag and keep them all together. If your children will be writing thank you notes, yeah, that's a thing, an American thing, but it wouldn't be a bad idea, actually, is to give a thank you note, you know, to say thanks for all the presents, I really love this and that, and the game you got me, or something like that would be a nice thing for kids to do, to show, you know, to teach them as well a bit of gratitude and stuff for what they've been lucky enough to get. Such as keeping the tag with the present or keeping a list, or just to remember who to write back to and things like that. But there's usually a card involved anyway as well, so Create traditions that don't involve presents. By creating family traditions that do not involve giving, you can help focus the day on your religious beliefs or on spending time together. Have a special food that your family eats every Christmas morning, such as a coffee cake or from the local bakery or a home. Why coffee cake? To have a nice cake. I don't like coffee. From a local bakery or a homemade casserole that makes that you make together on Christmas Eve. Some families buy matching pajamas and wear them to open presents on Christmas morning. Yeah, we usually like have a rasher sandwich or something like that on Christmas morning and a cup of tea or something like that after opening the presents, because we'd usually be opening the presents at about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and then have a cup of tea or something after that, and then go home and start getting the Christmas dinner preparations ready and everything. So Parso encourages families to also have a family activity after the presents are opened, such as a snack, singing songs, or going outside together. Expect a letdown after present opening. The anticipation is gone and there is a transition to going back and playing with the new toys. So yeah, there's always an initial when all the presents have been opened and there's wrappings flying everywhere. Awful excitement, and then it's like, okay, I've no more presents to open. With kids, like, and they're kind of, okay, what do I do now? Okay, I'll go back to one of the presents. You just want to keep opening and opening and opening. Sometimes the opening is more exciting than the present itself. But then they'll start putting them together, or they'll start doing stuff with them. So that initial excitement does wane, but the long-term excitement kicks in then. By teaching and modelling gratitude on Christmas morning, you can also help reduce the stress and keep the spirit of the holiday in your day. That's good, even with kids, you know, say thank you to Uncle Patrick for your presents or something like that. Suggest having each child open one gift at a time, taking turns and really looking at the gift and who gave it to you, and so they really appreciate the gift. Coach your child to thank the recipient even if they do not like the gift or receive a duplicate. Be sure you also have your children write thank you cards for each gift at Christmas. Yeah, so that's something I don't think we do that here generally, do we? But it's kind of an American thing, but it mightn't be a bad idea. If your child, or you in brackets, begins to get overwhelmed or cranky on Christmas morning, take a break, go outside, have a snack, or take a nap. The presents will still be there when you're ready to open them, even if it's on December 26th. That's always the nicest part, but it's, yeah, the more stressful part is the dinner, because it'd be like a game of Jenga or something in the oven, having two ovens on the go and kind of fitting 20 different items into the literally different trays. So I like, okay, this tray will actually fit on top of the other tray just to keep it hot and stuff like that, and this stuff needs to finish cooking, so I'll put that in the hot oven, and I'd have another oven just to keep things hot and so keep them warm, so they we can bring them all out together. It's always a juggling act, but it always works out pretty good. So that's some of the tips they have there for Christmas morning. Batteries, rubbish bags, screwdrivers, Allen keys, scissors, and you should be fairly good to go. Just don't forget the presents. A call is being made to introduce legislation governing the use of e-scooters and e-bikes as soon as possible. At present, regulations covering their use vary from one local authority to another. Aisling Dunn is head of public policy with Bolt, which provides alternative forms of transport for people who don't have access to cars. She says more joined-up thinking is required for the provision of the electric bike scheme. Let's see what she had to say.
At the moment, I think local authorities are somewhat in the dark. Should they be subsidising schemes? Should they be leaving it to private operators? Should they be having a number of different schemes, or should they just have one operator? Should they be waiting until the e-scooter legislation has passed and introduce both e-scooters and e-bikes at the same time? Or should they power ahead with bikes or e-bikes and see how they get on with that?
Yeah, it's difficult to know what to do about that, because, you know, it is more environmentally friendly, I suppose, than using a motorcycle or using a car, but, you know, not as much as a bicycle, but for people that maybe wouldn't have the physical ability for a bicycle, where they can use an e-scooter or use a, there's mobility scooters then as well. And yeah, there's lots of different electrical ones. There's like some of them are almost bordering on motorcycles at this stage, electric motorcycles. Some of them, they can go quite quickly. And so it's difficult to know what legislation to do. You don't want to do a full tax and insurance like a car, where you'd be, people would just stop using them probably more than likely. And they might just go with cars or motorcycles or whatever, if they're especially around cities and things like that. But you also want, I suppose, safety and things like that. Maybe safety legislation more than anything else. But yeah, it's difficult to know what to do, because they're kind of a new item and they're evolving all the time. They're probably getting a bit faster and a bit more range and a bit more convenience and things like that. Let's have a look at some of the... This is the 10 most common Amazon shopping mistakes people make. Even the most frequent Amazon shoppers will fall foul of these missteps. I suppose this might go for more than... Not just there, might go for eBay, or even if you're using adverts or Done Deal or things like that, it might be very similar for lots of different online shopping places. Not checking pricing history. The fact that prices change regularly on in Amazon is widely known, how when sales run, but and that also goes for eBay. You can check how much other items sold for the same kind of item. And things like that. You can go back and see the sales history if you search the item itself that you're looking up. And that's actually handy if you're looking up anywhere else. Even you say if you're looking at a coffee maker or something, you can look it up on some of these other websites as well. Just and you can check the history of how much they sold for. You can check sold. And for even secondhand ones or things like that, if you're thinking of buying secondhand. So it is that's a good tip to see the pricing history to make sure you're not overpaying. It's a little easier in recent months to check, making it clear on the product's listing when the price is best. It has been in the last 30 days, but rather than blindly purchasing whatever the price is, you can use various online tools to check a good price actually is. There's a shopping extension that you can use. Also, you can add on extension apps and things like that to check. There's also a very handy one for eBay if you're bidding on something. Is it like eBay Sniper or something like that, where it's an extension you could add on to it, and it's its own app kind of, and it'll bid for you. But what it does is, say there's an item up for auction and there's like 6 days left on it, and say you bid a maximum of €50. It's currently at a tenner, and you bid, look, I'll be willing to pay up to €50. So you bid a maximum of 50. Then you beat the current person who bid 10, and they say, oh, you know what, I'll go 11. And then you'll, with your maximum bid, you'll keep beating that. And then somebody else might come in, and or the other person might just keep coming back. Oh, look, I'm be willing to pay 20. And then you'll go 21, because, you know, with the auto bid system, that will bid you up to 50. So then, you know, they'll keep thinking about it, and it'll climb and climb and climb. Where if you install an app, if you use, like, I think it's eBay Sniper, there's a few different ones do the same kind of thing. If you want to bid a maximum of 50, you can do that, but it will bid that with 4 seconds left on the, instead of bidding straight away with 6 days left, it'll do it. You can specify the time. So you, I think down as far as 4 seconds, because of lag and things like that you might miss the bid. So what they'll do is, you bid nothing until there's like 4 or 5, a minute, whatever you want to do left. So it won't have a chance to be going back and forth and back and forth. So the person that bid a tenner might leave it off and look, I'm the highest bidder, I leave it off and see. And then, you know, they mightn't be there, or they might just keep an eye, put in, oh, look, I'll go up as far as 20 instead of already have been at 20 2 days before. And then, look, I'll make it 25, I'll make it 30, I'll make it 35, whatever. So you might get it for 21, or you might get it for, if they didn't bid, you know, some people don't bother. They bid once and then they don't think about it, unless they're getting messages about it all along. she might get it for 11, or you know, it's definitely, you have a better chance of saving money with one of those apps rather than bidding days out and you're the highest bidder and person someone else wants to, oh, you know, if I just give an extra euro, I might be the highest bidder, or an extra tenner or an extra fiver, I'm willing to go a bit more. Whereas if they are the highest bidder and they might leave it off and sure, look, we leave it off and see if I win, I win. If I don't, I don't. But I'm in the lead at the moment. They might leave it off, and in the last minute, then you might get in, and before they have a chance to counterbid. So it's a good way of saving money on eBay, and I don't know if it's available for other websites and things like that, but it is quite handy. With Amazon, you can do a price checking. You can add on stuff to do price checking. Does it say which app did they use for that? While your products page, you ought to be checking for additional coupons you can clip or special codes you can use at checkout. This have been, I often do that actually. I do a bit of research on the product itself and on Amazon or on eBay or whatever different of the websites I'd be using to see if there's any discounts, coupons and things like that. And they often work as from the manufacturer's own websites as well. So if you're buying something from Sony, you might find something like use the promo code Sony10 or something on some website and then go in and try. Now, oftentimes it doesn't work, but oftentimes it says, oh, we have introduced, you know, you have been awarded a 10% discount and you might get a few quid off of something, or 20%. So a lot of different ones use it. The likes of One Audio, the audio company, they use it a lot. They use a lot of different promo codes and things like that to get money off of stuff. And it's an incentive to them for customer retention and for customers going through with sales. And if they think they're going to get a few quid off, they might go ahead with the sale, where otherwise they might have just... they mightn't have bothered with it. Another thing I heard recently as well, actually, on some YouTube video or something, I don't know if it's 100% true or not, but if you put an item in your cart, say on any website, and you give your email address or whatever, or they have your email address already, say if you set up an account or whatever, put an item in your cart but leave it there, which I've done an odd time. I was like, you know, I don't know, will I bother buying it now, leave it off. And it has happened where I got an email then that, oh, the item you were looking at is now on discount, or, you know, there's a sale on, or get 10% off or something like that. So if there's something you were thinking about but you didn't need it urgently, put it in your cart like you're about to buy it, but then leave it there. And give it a few days and see if you'll get an email saying that, you know, that item you were looking at is now reduced price, and or, you know, use the promo code, whatever, and get a discount on it. So that might be another tip as well. Not using Subscribe and Save. Similarly, Subscribe and Save is available to use in a range of everyday essentials, and is it instantly saves you 5% on things you buy frequently and 15% on things you use if you use the service right. Yeah, there's a lot of, say if you're a regular user of a lot of different things, it can help. It can help to sign up for different things like that, different kind of club card type things, and they kind of reward you for being paying more. And if you're buying more items, they reward you. And if you're buying stuff anyway, and you could save for being a kind of a like a frequent flyer miles thing when you fly, then it's worth doing, you know, if you find yourself going back to the same place frequently. But often you can save more by shopping around. So I definitely recommend that as well. Check around the place. Not timing your purchases right is another mistake. Regardless of ways to snag extra coupons and slight discounts on purchases, buying items at the wrong time can end up costing you more. Amazon holds regular sales, and any major purchases should be made during these times where possible. Yeah, it's the same with most websites, isn't it? Keep an eye out for the sales, and if you hear a sale is coming up, even if you're looking at buying, say, a higher priced item, it would be good to look up if there's an upcoming sale or something coming out, or if something has been out a while as well. Sometimes it's worth to wait, give it an extra month before it's when it starts being discounted and things like that. I'd often do that where I wanted to get something that, like even the PlayStation VR, the first one. I didn't get it the first time. I was kind of, I don't know why I didn't get it, but maybe I wasn't that interested that time, or I had a bad experience with one of those VR experience things in a shopping center I did one time where I got very nauseous from it. I think the seat was moving and everything. It kind of put me off VR for a while, and I didn't purchase the PSVR when it came out first. And I was thinking about getting it in later on down the line, and but it was still, the price was still quite high, so I waited. And it wasn't long after, it was a couple of months after, that the price came down. And so I was glad I did then. I got it for, you know, 20-25% less than what it was when I was first looking at it. So it's definitely good to time your purchases right. If it's something you don't need urgently, kind of wait and see, and wait for the website or different Prime Days or Black Fridays or things like that, Cyber Monday, and you might get the same item much cheaper. Not checking different colours or configurations, that's another thing actually. Say if you're buying a set of headphones and or something like that, and you'd be okay, black, press to buy or whatever, and it's, you know, $25.99. But sometimes if you check it in white or in different colours, you might get it for, you know, $21.99, and it's off, that often happens. I've often seen that, and if you're not fussy about the colour of the item, you might get a few quid off of it if you check the different prices. So that's actually a very good tip. I've used that a few times where I wouldn't be bothered about colours, about those kind of things, and I just buy the cheapest one. Always choosing the fastest delivery option. The convenience of ordering and receiving your item within a couple of days is one of the biggest advantages, but it doesn't always pay to get your order straight away. In fact, you choose to receive an order a little later, Amazon may reward you. This can be in the form of an instant discount on what you're buying, or free digital goods like ebooks and apps. I didn't even know that. The offer varies, but it's worth considering if you're not in a rush for whatever you're buying. Simply choose the free no rush shipping at checkout. We don't have that for a lot of those ones. We have to pay. We have for some things, but not a lot. If you spend a certain amount, maybe. Yeah, and also it doesn't work a lot of the time. I don't know if it's because it's been shipped from abroad or it's not in stock or something, but I've often needed something fairly quickly. So, you know, it says if you use the normal postage, you'll have it on the 18th. But if you pay extra for the quick postage, you'll have it on the 15th. And then I pay the extra to have it on the 15th, and then it comes on the 17th or 18th. That's actually happened where it came on the day of the longer postage, even though I paid for the shorter postage. And, you know, I sent an email or whatever and never heard any more back about it. So, but that has happened a couple of times with different websites and stuff. Completely trusting the star rating. Outside of not nabbing the best pricing, there are a few other ways to make mistakes when buying at Amazon, and one of these is blindly trusting Amazon's reviews and ratings. Amazon is well aware of its fake review problem, but like many other retailers, is playing a game of cat and mouse and trying to curb misuse of the feature. Basically, take the star rating and any customer review with a pinch of salt. Check out reviews for the product you're buying at sites you trust, and use your best judgment. That's definitely true. You know, I'm sure all the companies is in their interest to have good reviews. So, you know, if they get a couple of the staff or a couple of the family members of the staff or anyone to, I love this item, it's the best I've ever had, it's much better than all the competitors and half the price, and, you know. So some independent research, maybe articles in magazines about the item or something like that, independent reviews that's, you know, non-sponsored or something, might be a good idea. Buying from a sketchy third-party seller, that trust factor extends to third-party Amazon sellers too. Underneath the buy button on a products page, you'll see who is selling the product and who is shipping the product. Often this will be Amazon on both counts, but sometimes you'll see a third party here. If it's the brand of the product you're buying and it's a brand you trust or the name of a retailer you trust, then it's usually not a concern. However, if you don't recognize the name, when it may be best avoiding the seller or at least checking out their reviews, with the above caveat about reviews and applying here. Oh yeah, so yeah, you have to be check the reviews, but be not, you might not be sure about it. But actually, it might be worth looking up the name and searching it on Google or something like that as well, outside of Amazon. To see if there's any, because there's a lot of websites set up for like dodgy sellers and things like that, where you can you mightn't find it in the website itself because they might have tried to pad the reviews. So it might be trying to find an independent review of the seller as well might be a good idea. The link to other sellers will say something like new and used from $31. By clicking to it, shows your options. So that's another way of looking at it as well. Not shopping Amazon Warehouse. A lot of folks near at used or refurbished products, but they are some of the easiest ways to save. Amazon offers major discounts on electronics, home and kitchen gear, tools, clothing, jewelry and more. And you don't even need an Amazon Prime membership to join the fun. Like other major retailers, Amazon takes a lot of customer returns, which it can no longer sell in the new inbox. It doesn't matter why the buyer sent the item back or whether it's even been opened. It has to be sold and used as a second time around. Amazon Warehouse is the spot where Amazon lists these cut prices. I don't even know if we have that here. I need to look it up. I haven't seen it, so... it's the same on eBay. You can choose used and, you know, see what the seller says about it. If you're looking for an item, you'd often maybe have an option might be good to get it used as well. Maybe if it's like a computer or something and someone else has just upgraded to a newer model, but you don't need, you know, the highest specs, and you might be happy enough with the secondhand model as long as it's working good and everything is in good shape. Yeah, it might be a good idea, and there's an option to return it if you're not happy with that. So that's good. That's some good tips there as well. The cost of Christmas dinner has increased by 7% compared to last year. Grocery price data from Kantar shows the average cost of a Christmas dinner for four people will be €33.21 this year. So I presume that's per person. Is it? Yeah, it'd be the cheapest one ever otherwise. Brussels sprouts saw the largest increase, jumping by 65%. The price of Christmas pudding and parsnips also jumped 59% and 50% respectively, while grocery inflation is now at a record of 14.7%. The average annual grocery bill is set to rise from €7,037 to €8,071, an extra €1,034 a year the groceries are going to cost. Yeah, definitely prices are going up at the moment. I'm more connected to the universe now thanks to this digital telescope. The computer brains in the Unistellar EV Scope 2 make stargazing more accessible and engaging. So this is like a huge telescope, electronic, looks like it's an electronic, it's a digital telescope. So my wow moment with the Unistellar EV Scope 2, so this is in CNET, arrived almost immediately after setting it up. As the digital telescope sent my phone a gradually improving image of the spiraling arms of M51, the Whirlpool Galaxy. I felt a bit in awe, realizing that billions of stars had sent some photons across millions of light years to the deck behind my house. The image was crude by NASA Space Telescope standards, but I'd use the telescope to pluck it from the sky myself. With no expertise, no fiddling with filters, no setting up motors to compensate for the Earth's rotation, I relied on the telescope smarts, but it was still so much more immediate than flipping through the astronomy picture of the day. The EV Scope 2 sweeps away all such complications by identifying the stars it's seeing, slewing over to the object you've selected on your smartphone and tracking it automatically. By stacking multiple frames captured with its digital image sensor, it can take reasonably good digital photos, even when competing against suburban light pollution. The EV telescope's computing smarts make it relatively easy to find stars, planets, galaxies, and nebulae in the sky, in the night sky. There's one downside, though. It costs $4,299 if you want the custom backpack and the tripod. So it's not going to be a casual purchase, yeah. For educators or enthusiasts, though, it's a great option. Yeah, it might be nice for schools or something like that, if they could get like a grant for it or use it or something like that. I don't know if it would work as well here with all the clouds and everything, but it would be nice, though, wouldn't it, to have it for a school thing where you can take pictures of the different stars and things like that. For educators or enthusiasts, it's a great option. It's citizen science abilities are icing on the cake. So it just takes multiple photos like the modern phone cameras and stitches them together to make the best possible photo that you can get. Serious astronomers might well stick with their other designs, but the EVscope 2's software made it apparent that digital smarts can bring otherwise inaccessible technology to the reach of non-experts too. It's a bit like cheating, like using a phone app that recognises bird calls to identify birds, but exposing more people to astronomy is good. Yeah, that's actually true. There's a lot. There's one for plants as well, I downloaded. I was testing it out, going the garden and the neighbor's garden and everything, taking pictures of leaves and flowers and stuff, and it was telling me all the names of the fancy names of all the, most of them Latin and stuff, names of all the old flowers and or of all the flowers and things like that. So my favorite subjects were M51 and the galaxy it's tangling with, NGC 5195, M57 the Ring Nebula, and M31 Andromeda, the neighbouring galaxy that will collide with our own Milky Way in 4 billion years to form a larger galaxy about 6 billion years. I also checked out the different clusters, globular cluster, the Sunflower Galaxy, Pinwheel Galaxy, and assorted other galaxies and nebulae. Yeah, that sounds like, good fun as well. It's expensive, though, and you can get standard ones, but I suppose that gets you clearer pictures and makes it much easier than the other ones. But there's a lot of fun in getting your standard one as well, and using your charts and trying to find the stars and things like that. There's a lot of fun in that, too. The Irish-produced film on Colleen Kuhn is amongst 15 movies to make the shortlist for the Best International Feature Film category at the 95th Oscars. The film will now go on to the next stage of the Oscar nominations, where members of the Academy will select from the reduced list of contenders in the category to pick the final five nominees. The 2023 Oscars will take place on March the 12th in Los Angeles, so that's hopefully the Irish film will do good. I know that other one, the kind of strange movie, I mean, to see the Banshees of Inisherin, there's talks of that as well being nominated for Oscars as well, so hopefully that does good as well. Doing 11 minutes of silly John Cleese-style walk can be good for your health. Research published by the British Medical Journal shows a stride similar to that from Monty Python's Ministry of Silly Walks sketches can help burn an extra 8 calories a minute. Scientists in the US also found spending 11 minutes a day doing the silly walk could cut the risk of death by 10%, unless some people attack you for doing a silly walk. Okay, or just go normal walking, or do the power walking where you move your hands, I suppose. You see a lot of people doing that. They want to kind of exercise their whole body, so the hands are going back and forth and stuff as well pretty quickly while they walk, to get a whole body exercise, and that's fine. A lot of people do that as well. Justin Bieber is reportedly about to get $200 million for selling his music rights. The Wall Street Journal says the star is close to finalising a deal with the company Hipgnosis, which has purchased the back catalogues of many other stars. It buys up the work of artists and earns money when their music is streamed online or used in movies or advertising. So he's about to sell off his music. Channel 4's alternative Christmas message will be generated by artificial intelligence and delivered by a robot. The show, which will run after the King's Speech. Oh yeah, the King's Speech. I thought it was the movie. It'll be the first time in a long time that it'll be a king giving the speech in England. We'll see Amica speak about the highs and lows of the year. Nothing the robot, who was developed by Cornwall, will say has been written or scripted by a human. An AI robot, Amica, will be speaking after the King's Speech. CBeebies presenter in the UK, George Webster, says it's a dream come true to take part in Strictly Come Dancing Christmas special. The 22-year-old says he watches the show every year and he's loving every second, and his professional partner, Amy Dowden. He'll be joined by other stars, including Nicola Roberts, Rosie Ramsey and Alexandra Mardell. I don't know any of them, but it is quite popular, the Strictly Come Dancing. I've never watched it myself, but it is quite popular. Rag & Bone Man is going to make a surprise appearance on EastEnders this Christmas. The award-winning singer, who is a fan of the soap, will perform in a charity carol fundraiser in Albert Square. He's described his cameo as one of the best days of his life, so he's obviously a big fan of EastEnders, so he's going to be going on EastEnders, so good for him. The Verge have put up their year in review. Let's see what some of the things that they have has showed up as their main news in the year. Fails of 2022. The Nintendo Switch really showed its age. I know they introduced the OLED version of it, but it's still quite popular. Successes of 2022. Android smartwatches are finally becoming interesting. I suppose with the Google Watch coming out. Fails of 22. Peloton's year of layoffs, gaffes and ship metaphors. For us, that was one of the big stories, I suppose, of 2022, is a lot of tech companies, I suppose. I don't know if Peloton were before Twitter, but Twitter laying off people, and then I don't know, Amazon as well, and Facebook or Meta as they're known now as well, letting go of a lot of people. Successes of 2022, iOS 16, new lock screen customization. Success of 22, Google Maps helped me get out and explore more. That's around for a while though. 2022 was the year of crypto's climate reckoning. Crypto has gone down a bit, a lot of it due to controversies like that Sam Brinkenfried, is an SBF guy, and like all the money going missing and everything like that, and it showed some of the shortfalls. But you know, these things have happened in normal banking as well, with the 2007 crash and all that, or 2008 crash and things like that. It's definitely it's an ongoing thing, but it has damaged crypto a lot as well. Fails of 22, the Intel P series was a step back. Apple Watch Ultra review, let's see what it can really do. So the new Apple Watch Ultra came out and it did pretty good, I think. Tesla is reportedly doubling its 3NY discounts. Tesla is offering customers $7,500 price adjustment if they take delivery of a Model 3 or Y this month, according to Electric. I suppose it's a difficult time of the year, so maybe a lot of car companies are doing different things because people want to wait and get the next year, get the 2023. So I suppose they're offering discounts and things like that to keep selling cars, because you know, you buy a car now and in a couple of weeks it'll be a year old or so. Steam Deck gets Steam OS 3.4 update. Here's what's inside. The highlights for me: the new horizontal performance overlay that uses the wasted space while you're running games at 16.9, a fix for weird fan behavior and ability to manually eject SD cards to be extra safe before you pull them out. And there's no way, there's way more too. So they've made some good updates. Welcome to the Ultra Watch video wrapped. There's lots of, if you go to The Verge, you can see a lot of the different, they review all the best watches of the year, different, the Apple Watch and the Google Watch and some of the discount ones as well. What do I think was, because they probably won't go to the Ultra Disc. I suppose bang for your buck, kind of value for money watch of the year, if I was to give it myself, I'd be always aiming for the budget side of them. Would probably be the Realme Watch 3 Pro, but it's very hard to get. It was only in India for a while. I think you can get it, and possibly now outside of India, but because it had kind of ticked a lot of the boxes for like around 70-ish euro. You could answer calls on it, so it had a microphone and a speaker, and Bluetooth calling and all that. I'm not sure if it had GPS, but it has blood oxygen sensor, long-lasting battery as well. I think it was on extended mode or something up to like 2 or 3 weeks or something like that, but probably on normal mode over a week, which is more than a lot of the top ones. Yeah, and it didn't have Wear OS or Apple OS or anything like that. It had its own OS, but apparently it worked quite good. So I think if I was to give my kind of all-rounder kind of budget, that would be probably it. There's a few other ones now on the market as well that, might be competing with that as well. I saw a new one that's going to be released, not released yet. They were taking like pre-orders with similar specs as well. When it comes to phones, I suppose, the Nothing phone was kind of the style icon of the year of all phones, even though it's half the price or a quarter of the price of some of the high-end phones. But I think it definitely was the style icon of the year when it comes to phones. When it comes to out-and-out cameras, maybe the few different competitors there, you know, the Samsung Galaxy, the Ultra, the newest Ultra, the iPhone 14 Pro Max or Pro. Also, Xiaomi had their Ultra as well. Is it the 12 Ultra or 13? 12 Ultra, I think. We're all up there, you know. So Sony as well have some good sensors. I think it came out recently that Apple kind of, Tim Cook was in visiting Sony's factory, and he kind of thanked them for providing the sensors for their cameras. So if you're using an iPhone, you're using a Sony sensor on your camera, which is not a bad thing, because Sony, you know, very good. Their mirrorless cameras are probably leading the way at the moment when it comes to professional camera technology and things like that. They're up there, you know, they're as good as any of the Canons or Nikons and things like that. So if their sensors are good enough for professional photographers, they're probably good enough for the iPhone and things like that as well. So their own, as a result, in their own phone, even though the phone isn't hugely popular, the camera is supposed to be quite good in it as well, on the Sony phones. There's an article here on NBC News in America. Adults who buy toys for themselves are responsible for a fourth of all toy sales annually and are the biggest drivers of growth through the industry, NDP Group's data shows. Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of adults do buy, I suppose, what they might... It depends on what you... Like, say, there are some, like, even Lego that are, like, 300 or 400 quid, like these huge Legos that a lot of adults buy and things like that, even though it is a kind, technically a kid's toy, but a lot of them are extremely, like, Technics and things are more complicated, or a PlayStation, you know, or an Xbox. Are they kid's toys, or are they... Or, you know, are they classed as all round? Because, you know, maybe for that they might class that as kids' toys, but I'd say it's for anybody. So there's a lot of stuff that would be borderline. Is it a toy or not a toy? Or, but if it's out and, like, if it's toddlers' toys or something like that, and adults are buying them for themselves, it's a bit strange. All right, but sure, each for their own, I suppose. Meta told us how much the Quest 2's new GPU boost might affect your battery, and it's good news. The company doesn't anticipate a noticeable impact to battery life, spokesperson David Gordon told The Verge after they first published their story, because the additional power draw will be small and only limited to cases where the additional GPU compute is actively needed. So they said it won't be as bad as some articles were predicting. Micron will cut 10% of its workforce next year. The chipmaker announced the plan as part of its earnings report on Wednesday, saying the reduction would come from a combination of voluntary attrition and layoffs through 2023. And the company also won't be doing bonuses next year and says the executive salaries will be cut too. So they reported it has 48,000 employees, according to CNBC, meaning that around 4,800 positions could be affected. So there's a lot of cuts going on in a lot of different tech places. The verified @RecklessPatel Twitter account is gone. the fake Neil I Twitter account created by Verge managing editor Alex Kranz that was verified and recommended to many during Elon's messy first attempt at a $7.99 Twitter Blue subscription has met its end. Despite only existing for little more than a month, the Remember Reckless Patel is continuing on. So they made a fake account to kind of test it out to see if it was getting rid of fake accounts. Successes of 2022. NASA's InSight lander loses power, enters retirement on Mars. Meta is making the Quest 2's GPU more powerful. I was saying that earlier, or about the battery side of it. Mubvoi is the latest smartwatch maker to jump on the subscription bandwagon. Yeah, a lot of them. I actually had one of those, you know, the doorbell CCTV things, and it was free, the subscription thing. It would give you like 3 days for free if you could pay if you wanted to do more or whatever, or is it a week or something like that? Free, a week, I think. But now it'll show you yesterday, the day before that. If you want to see today, sometimes it's only happened sometimes it'll allow me, sometimes it won't, but it wants you to subscribe to something. It's like you click on it and it says that do you want to subscribe for 1 month, 3 months or whatever, and you can't get out of it. It won't let you see today's today's CCTV or whatever. It lets you show live, but the ones that say somebody moved in front of it, you have to wait for the next day to see it, so, which is a bit weird. But I suppose most of them are on subscription, all right, so it's to be expected. Netflix will start streaming Nike Training Club classes next week. So they're going to be showing different exercises and things like that. I suppose that's a good thing. Twitter's cash tags now start and shows charts now. If you look at the search results for a cash tag, let's say for sake example Tesla, you see now that the chart tracking its stock price. According to a thread from Twitter Business, the charts only seem to show the current day's performance, but you can click on a button to see more information on Robinhood. So that's handy for people that use it for business and things like that. You can check different stocks and see how they're trending and things like that on the day, or if you click on it you can see it for longer. So if you're watching stocks and things like that, it's good. The FCC in America proposes $300 million fine for massive auto warranty robocaller scam. So there's loads of those robocallers always going on. How to make a working Lego computer brick. Remember when this man brought Lego's classic computer bricks to life by putting a working computer and OLED inside? Have bittersweet news, though. I did connect him with someone at Lego. It doesn't look like that's moving forward. He's no plans to introduce more than a few. At this point, it sounds like he's nearing the end of the project. Consolation prize, here's a rough idea how to make one yourself. So it's just to put a little screen in your Lego, so if you want a face on your Lego item or something like that. Cheating with ChatGPT. So this ChatGPT has become very popular. So it's an AI that will create something for you. So if you tell it, you know, write an article for me about the history of Irish politics from 1970 to 1978. It'll use everything it can find on the computer to write you an article that looks fairly good. It might need some corrections or something like that, or might need some adjustment, but it can do a reasonably good job of answering different questions or doing jobs for you. So in her always entertaining, informative style, Wall Street Journal senior personal technology columnist and friend of The Verge, Joanna Stern, goes back to high school and tries to cheat her way through AP literature with some help from ChatGPT. So there's a video about that if you want to look it up on YouTube, cheating with ChatGPT. So see if she sees if she can use it to cheat on like the Leaving Cert kind of thing, using the AI to write the articles for her, write the different tasks for her. So that'll be interesting. Lenovo's mini LED monitors can charge some of the thirstiest laptops with 140 watt USB-C PD. So it has a good power output from the monitor itself to, if you want to plug stuff in, to use it for power as well. So that's quite handy. Is Instagram's notes feature already dead? I don't know if it actually ever got off the ground or if I just know a bunch of millennials who wanted to briefly relive the glory days of AIM away messages. But my Instagram friends have pretty much all stopped posting notes within a week of launch. I don't know about you, but I can't stand having a go to DM section to see them. Are your buddies still using notes? I've never even heard of them. I don't use Instagram that often, though. Netflix unveils a terrifying AI in the first teaser for Jung_E. So a new thing coming out on Netflix. So that's about it for today. I hope you've enjoyed Tech Thursday. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. I hope you've enjoyed today's show. You can email myself, patrick102fm at gmail.com. And I'll answer any questions you might have. It'll be probably in the new year now at this stage. So happy Christmas to everybody. Thanks for listening throughout the year. If you want to listen back to any episodes, you can listen on any of your podcast apps. Just look up Tech Thursday with Patrick Sheehan, or Tech Thursday, I think, and you'll find it. Thank you for listening. I've been Patrick Sheehan, and I'll see you again in the new year.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.